I'll show it though.
Welcome to members of the Health and Human Services Finance Committee. We do not yet have a quorum, but we would like to get moving ahead with House File 832, Representative Hamilton's bill. Representative Hamilton, why don't you start out with your bill, and then when we do have a quorum, we can take a break, call the meeting to order, and move your bill. Representative Hamilton, to you, 832.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I didn't bring a PowerPoint presentation, but I'd be happy to run through this one if there's time. So, Mr. Chairman, this is the local public health grant bill that we're bringing forth, and the local public health grants are one of the main sources of state investments in the Minnesota public health systems. In 2003, I believe it was, there was a reduction in this area by about 29%, and those dollars were never reinstated. And so you can see the dollar amount here. There is an increase in our ask of about 29%. That's the bare minimum or basics around this bill. I do have a testifier, Mr. Chairman, if I could turn it over to them at this time.
Thank you, Representative Hamilton. Please introduce your testifier, and testifier, if you could say who you are and where you're from and proceed, that'd be great.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Renee Fraundienst, and I'm the Public Health Division Director for Stearns County, and I'm also the legislative co-chair for the Local Public Health Association, and I'm here in that capacity. The local public health agencies across Minnesota are really truly the backbone of prevention and early response to community issues and priorities. And similar to law enforcement, we have been charged with maintaining the health and the safety of the citizens in our jurisdictions. Our responsibilities are very clearly identified in Minnesota statute, and they revolve around assessment, planning, implementing, and evaluating activities around community needs or community priorities that have been identified. And we use a framework of people, skills, and resources to meet those normal and then also emerging needs around those priorities. Over the past several years, as with many other systems, the framework has been eroding in the local public health system. Local units of government have tried to fill the gap with local tax levy, but they have limited resources and can no longer continue to pour the amount of local tax levy into the gaps to fill those. As Representative Hamilton said, the main source of the state's investment in the local public health system has been the local public health grant. These are flexible dollars, and our policymakers at the local level use those to direct to program areas around, as have been identified locally. Typically, where you'll see these filling the gap, so to speak, is around emerging chronic disease issues or infectious disease issues or outbreaks such as tuberculosis or pertussis or foodborne outbreaks. And then most recently, in the area of the Ebola planning that we did with our local partners. So they support these core functions that have been identified in statute, but they have decreased over time and actually places Minnesota, according to the recent United Health Foundation annual report, 44th in the nation in its investment in local public health. In 2003, as Representative Hamilton said, those dollars were reduced by 29%. They have not been reinstated. And with that loss at the local level, there were programs, services, and staff that were also cut or eliminated and have not been restored. We know that investing in the local public health system does pay off. We have evidence that shows that if we invest in individual programs, such as WIC and home visiting, we'll see direct medical cost savings as well as savings to other systems such as corrections and in child protection. But there's new evidence, national evidence, that shows if we invest not only in a program but really in the system itself, that we're going to save lives and money. There's some research out there from Dr. Glenn Mays that shows for every 10% increase in public health system spending, we're going to see a 7% decrease in infant mortality and a 3% decrease in heart disease mortality. So a reinvestment such as this in the local public health system infrastructure will actually begin to close the gap that have continued to grow over the resources available versus the resource needs, help to relieve the local tax levy, which has increasingly carried the burden for the expanding community needs and is a wise investment in the health of our communities. With that, I would be happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Frondietz. Any questions? All right. We do now have a quorum, Representative Hamilton, so we will officially call the meeting to order. And do I have a motion to approve the minutes for March 4th, 20?
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Hamilton, Representative Hamilton moves minutes from March 4th. Any additions or corrections? Seeing no additions and corrections, all those in favor of approval, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Minutes are approved. Representative Hamilton, you have 832 and an A1 amendment. Would you like to move the 832, please?
Mr. Chairman, I'll move the 832. I'll move 832, and I believe it's being held over for possible inclusion.
That is correct. Representative Hamilton moves House File 832 to be laid over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. Representative Hamilton, you also have A1 amendment. Would you like to put that on and get it in the shape you would like?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will move the A1 amendment.
All right. Is there a description and any questions about the A1?
Mr. Chairman, I can have the testifier speak to it as well. I believe it is making a change, reducing the amount of dollars that are requested. We are...
Correct.
Yes, we're reducing the amount of dollars requested.
All right. All those in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The A1 amendment is adopted. Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just wondering whether, in terms of your saying that your bill replaced the funds that were lost previously so they can return to previous service levels, is that the pre-amendment dollar amount or the post-amendment dollar amount?
Mr. Chair, it is the post-amendment dollars.
Okay, thank you. It would have been nice to know that at the time because it felt like we were cutting in half the goal, even though I know Chair Dean is going to do his best to make sure that we take care of public health and all the needs of the state when he gets his target.
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. If you take a look at the numbers on there, the total appropriation that we're asking for over the biennium is $12,870,432, and it was inadvertently placed in the original bill that we introduced as far as those dollar amounts in both fiscal year 16 and 17, and that wasn't the intent. So we're just trying to get it back to the intent, and that's where the amendment came from.
Thank you.
Further discussion? Questions? Seeing none. Representative Hamilton, anything else?
No. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just renew our motion to have this be held over for possible inclusion.
Representative Hamilton renews his motion that House File 832, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in the HHS Omnibus Bill. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. HHS 832 is held over for possible inclusion. Next up. Representative Hoppe, you have House File 346, and with you, you have Representative Uglum. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I was originally not going to be here. I was supposed to be in Moorhead with my daughter looking at a college, but I'm here instead. So I thought I wasn't going to be here, and Representative Uglum was nice enough to pinch hit, and I think would probably do a better job presenting the bill than I would in any event, so I will turn that over to him, and I thank you and the committee members for your time.
Thank you, Representative Hobby. I hope that doesn't mean that university is scratched off the list of potentials.
No,
still in the running. All right. Just a program change. Representative Uglum. You are going to be speaking to House File 346. I will go ahead and move House File 346 and to recommend it be laid over for possible inclusion in the HHS Omnibus Bill. Representative Uglum, you have an oral amendment. I'm going to move that oral amendment on line 1.17 after 2016, insert $800,000 in fiscal year 2017. Is that the intent, Representative Uglum?
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
All right. Does staff have that change? Sure. That would be on line 1.17 after 2016, insert 800,000 in fiscal year 2017.
Mr. Chair, on 1.7, it's just replacing 16 with 17, or is it another 800,000 in 17?
No, it's insert and 800,000 in fiscal year 2017.
You're creating 1.17 with that? Is that the case?
Yes. All right. Everyone got that? Great. Okay. Thank you, Representative Uglem, to the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Pleasure to be here this afternoon. I'm here to present House File 346, which is the Minnesota Poison Control Center's bill. I have some personal experience with the Poison Control Center over the years, and it's a wonderful organization. Some of you may know that state statute mandates that Minnesota have a poison control center. Unfortunately, state statute doesn't mandate how they're going to get the money. Right now, Hennepin County Medical Center is the current vendor, and over the years has built a really impressive resume taking care of this very important issue for the state. Federal funding cuts and some of the other issues with the money, as well as an expanded program, are necessary for this request. And I think in your packets you'll see a 2015 fact sheet and a map showing the extent of the Minnesota Poison Control Center. Mr. Chair, members, I do have a number of testifiers here this afternoon, and I'll turn it over to them to explain the bill further.
Thank you, Representative Uglem. I have Deb Anderson, Director of the Minnesota Poison Control. Please proceed, introduce yourself, and proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for having me here today. My name is Debbie Anderson, and I am the Director of the Minnesota Poison Control System. In fulfillment of the Department of Health's statutory obligation, we provide poison control services to the entire state of Minnesota. I want to thank you for the $500,000 increase in base support for Poison Center funding appropriated in 2013. At that time, we requested $1.4 million to compensate for losses in federal funding and an ongoing budget shortfall. The $500,000 appropriation has been used to cover critical operating costs and is greatly appreciated. However, we were unable to attain the remainder of the necessary funds from the legislature in 2014. We are here to request an $800,000 increase in annual appropriations. This amount would fund the remaining $680,000 shortfall in operating costs, thereby ensuring uninterrupted provision of critical emergency care services, and would provide $120,000 to restore public education activities and increase public health surveillance and response for emerging issues like poisonings from e-cigarettes and liquid nicotine and evolving drugs of abuse. Anyone can call the Poison Center anytime from anywhere in Minnesota. Our 24/7 emergency call center takes calls from homes, schools, daycare centers, workplaces, and healthcare facilities of all types and sizes across the state. Callers are community members and healthcare providers, including first responders, EMTs, paramedics, nurses, and physicians. Our poison information specialists provide immediate, individualized medical assessment, treatment plans, and follow-up for people of all ages who are exposed accidentally or unintentionally to prescription medications, drugs of abuse, household products, chemicals, and poisonous plants. In 2014, the Poison Center answered over 48,000 calls from all 87 Minnesota counties. Your packet includes a handout with data on calls from your district on page 1 and a map of statewide calls by county on page 2. The Poison Center saves lives and money. Every $1 spent on Poison Center services saves more than $13 in medical costs and lost productivity. In 2014 alone, the Poison Center saved Minnesota taxpayers over $35 million and prevented 27,000 unnecessary emergency department visits and improved clinical outcomes. 91% of poison exposures in the home are safely managed at home through consultation with Poison Center staff, preventing unnecessary healthcare visits and emergency department crowding. When we survey our callers, 80% say that if the Poison Center wasn't available, they would have gone to the emergency department or clinic. Our 24/7 emergency call center and our real-time data collection enable us to provide critical public health surveillance and rapid response to emerging public health threats. We respond to mass exposures to industrial chemicals, pesticides, and carbon monoxide. We were the first to alert and educate public health officials and the community about synthetic marijuana and illicit drugs known as bath salts. We rapidly identified and responded to potentially life-threatening pediatric ingestions of laundry detergent pods. We serve as an immediate community resource for providing the life-saving medication naloxone for heroin or opiate overdose. We are working with the Department of Health to provide poisoning data from e-cigarettes and liquid nicotine and toxicology expertise for the new medical cannabis program. Failure to fund this $800,000 request will result in a cascade of losses. The initial loss of medical education, prevention education, and public health surveillance will be followed by the loss of national accreditation and more than $400,000 of contingent federal funds. The capacity of our 24/7 emergency call center will be reduced, resulting in greater demands placed on other healthcare resources and increased healthcare costs. In summary, the Poison Center serves all Minnesotans, saving lives and money. Minnesota needs the Poison Center, and we need your help. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Anderson. Next up, we have Dr. John Cole from the American College of Emergency Physicians. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and where you're from, and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for having me today. My name is Dr. John Cole. I am an emergency physician at Hennepin County Medical Center. I'm also the medical director of the Minnesota Poison Control System, and I'm a fellow in the American College of Emergency Physicians. My colleagues in emergency departments across Minnesota call the Poison Center daily for assistance. I can assure you this from my own time in the Poison Center and in the emergency department. With expanding numbers of medications, drugs of abuse, household products, environmental poisons, it's impossible for emergency physicians to know it all. The Poison Center aids emergency physicians real-time, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, and points them to specific life-saving treatments that often are not a part of the everyday practice of emergency medicine. There's no question that emergency physicians would order more tests and admit more patients if the toxicology expertise of the Minnesota Poison Control System was unavailable. This legislation has the full support of the Minnesota chapter of the American College of Emergency Physicians, Minnesota ACEP, which includes more than 600 emergency physicians statewide. A letter of support is included in your packet. Poison Center calls come from all across Minnesota, including many from rural areas. Because we interface with literally every hospital in the state, we are acutely aware of each hospital's resources, and we can facilitate getting the right patient to the right level of care or the right therapy to the right patient while keeping them as close to their home as possible. The Poison Center also provides professional training of physicians, pharmacists, nurses, and pre-hospital providers across the state. We train physicians in emergency medicine, pediatrics, internal medicine, critical care medicine, occupational and environmental medicine, and family medicine. We also provide valuable training for the Health Partners Physician Toxicology Fellowship at Regents Hospital, which is the only medical toxicology training program available in the state and one of a small number in the entire country. Graduates go on to practice all across Minnesota, providing valuable toxicology expertise to their own emergency departments and communities. The Poison Center also provides disaster preparedness training, public education, and poison prevention programs for communities across the state. As has been noted, unequivocal data shows that money spent on poison centers saves at a rate of $13 to one. As an example from my own clinical practice, let's say a child drinks a bottle of over-the-counter Tylenol. In scenario one, a call to the Poison Center and a simple calculation determines that the amount ingested, while frightening to a non-medical parent, is in fact non-toxic. The child is kept safely at home, and the Poison Center assistance allows follow-up inside their home with no hospital admission. In scenario two, for the same child, 911 instead is called. The child goes by ambulance to an emergency department where the physician does not call the Poison Center and, like most physicians, does not know off the top of their head the safe Tylenol overdose limit for a child. The physician orders the nurse to place an intravenous line, draw labs, including a Tylenol level, and the child is given activated charcoal. Cost of the emergency transport, the physician and hospital facility fee, lab tests, IV, and unnecessary activated charcoal were completely avoidable had the Poison Center been called in the first place. Furthermore, this child suffers a needle stick, is exposed to pathogens inside a hospital, and receives an activated charcoal treatment that has no benefit and may in fact actually be harmful. This is just one of many similar scenarios encountered by community members and medical professionals. You also hear shortly from Mr. Thompson about how the Poison Center assists in emergencies that actually do require emergent transfer and transport to a hospital for assistance. The Poison Center has a broad statewide coalition of supporters, including professional organizations, hospitals and healthcare organizations, urgent care centers, emergency departments, and emergency medical services. A handout in your packet shows the coalition, which continues to grow seemingly by the day. Public support of the Poison Center is also strong, as you can see from three letters included in your packet. I can think of no better investment in Minnesota than the Poison Center. We prevent unnecessary hospital visits, we shorten hospital stays, we reduce unnecessary testing, we provide public and professional education that literally no one else can, and above all, we save lives. Please support the Poison Center. Thank you very much for your time and your consideration.
Thank you, Dr. Cole. Representative Lohmer has a question for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't really have a question. I just wanted to take an opportunity to welcome Dr. Cole to the committee. He and I lived in the same neighborhood for about 20 years and watched him grow up, and I'm so thankful for the good work that you're doing, and I'm really proud of you, and thanks for being here.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lohmer, let this be a lesson that you never know who the people in your life will end up being someday.
Representative Liebling, would you like to embarrass Dr. Cole as well?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. In fact, I was going to start by saying I was not going to embarrass him. I hope. Anyway, first of all, let me just say I think that, you know, this is a wonderful resource for the state, and I've supported this in the past and absolutely believe it deserves support. But I just had a question based on the map that we got, and I hope you're the one that can answer this, maybe not, but the map that shows where the calls, the numbers of calls that come in from around the state, and of course you see on the map that lots of them, a big group of them, come from Hennepin County. That of course makes a lot of sense. 11,666, so this is for 2014. But then when you look at, say, even Ramsey County, it's a whole lot lower than that and a whole lot lower around the state. And I just wondered, it can't be that there are many fewer poisonings everywhere else. I'm sure that there are somewhat equivalent numbers of incidents that could potentially come in. So I'm really wondering who the other ones are calling. You know, who are they calling in Ramsey County that they have such a lower number of calls? Are they calling 911? Are they calling their local hospital? Can you shed a little bit of light on that? It's just kind of a curiosity question.
Dr. Cole.
Mr. Chair, Representative, it's a difficult question to answer because it's a question regarding the unknown. The epidemiology of poisoning has changed over the last four decades or so, such that our calls in terms of public exposures, specifically with children, have fortunately gone down through various public health measures. And hospital calls have gone up dramatically. Unfortunately, the incidence of overdoses that we get called about has increased dramatically. The data is difficult to interpret, and I certainly have no specific scientific evidence, but I would interpret this based on the size and number of hospitals in each county, because a fair number of our calls do come from hospitals.
Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think that it's important to know, too, that, I mean, Hennepin County is, I think at last count, about 23% of the state's population, and we have a children's hospital that kids get brought into from outside our borders just because they have become a trusted resource for a lot of people. So I think there's some of that sort of thing going on. And it's just, we tend to have more immigrant families, which have larger kids. And so, I mean, it's just like kind of the number of kids in any one area will tend to drive the number of calls or the number of seniors, as the doctor pointed out, because you end up with a lot of seniors who get their medications mixed up and want some reassurance that things are going to be okay. So I think it's, you know, kind of the early ages and the late ages that probably lead this more than anything else. And we're just, you know, a big population center with a lot of people in those two demographics.
Thank you. All right, next up we have Mr. Bucko Thompson. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, thank you very much for having me here today. My name is Bucko Thompson. I'm a pharmacist in Warroad, Minnesota. I live in Roosevelt, Minnesota with my wife and my two daughters, Ayla and Eden. Which is about 15 minutes from the Canadian border. That's about a 30-minute drive to Roseville, Minnesota.
Mr. Thompson, how far is Roosevelt? I'm trying to figure out where that is. I don't think I've ever been there.
Roosevelt is 10 minutes to the east of Warroad, Minnesota. So where the chimney stack of Minnesota is, it's on the south part of Lake of the Woods.
South part of Lake. All right, yep. Now I know where it is. Okay,
Mr. Chair, that's where the best muskie fishing is up there.
Best muskie and walleye fishing in the state.
I've never seen a muskie, so I don't know. Anyway, well, we appreciate you coming all the way down and sharing some of your experience about that. And please proceed. Representative Murphy, I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, I was just wondering if you might be able to help me.
I have a hard time breathing.
I'll try to hold it together here. Okay. Is there a doctor in the house as well, by the sounds of it?
Oh, you're getting worse. Oh,
my goodness. Jameson Whiskey, Murphy. Jameson Whiskey.
Oh, no.
Mr. Thompson.
On March 23rd, 2014, My wife Haley and I had the biggest scare of our lives with our 2-year-old baby girl, Ayla. The three of us, along with our newborn, Eden, were in our living room. Haley was telling me a brief story about her recent snowshoeing experience with a dog, and Haley had been doing some touch-up painting in the kitchen. While she was in the kitchen doing some touch-up painting, she had a small cap full of mineral spirits up high on the counter. Well, as Haley was telling me the story in the living room, our 2-year-old girl, Ayla, in about 30 seconds, made her way to the kitchen, pushed up the chair to the counter where she saw this cap. She climbed up and grabbed it. We had noticed she walked in there, and Haley walked into the kitchen quick and noticed it was too late, and Ayla had already swallowed the mineral spirits. And she had possibly aspirated it into her lungs, which can be fatal. Ayla started gagging. I can just picture my girl in my arms. She started gagging and coughing profusely and was having trouble breathing. Haley called 911 to get the ambulance on the way, and I called Poison Center. We reached on our cell phone, and I was on the phone with Kirk at the Poison Center. He's the Poison Center specialist. I told him that Ayla had ingested mineral spirits. Kirk could hear Ayla coughing and gagging in the background. Kirk said she needed immediate medical attention. For 15 minutes, we were scrambling, trying to keep our daughter awake and breathing, anxiously waiting for the arrival of the ambulance. Kirk gave us medical advice and kept us calm. Meanwhile, the other Poison Center staff communicated with EMS, dispatch, and the responding paramedic, providing information on expected outcomes and treatment advice. We also obtained transfer information, initiated discussion about potential transport by helicopter. The helicopter was on its way. They also called to speak to the physician in the emergency room at Life Care Medical Center in Roseau before our arrival. We had a very poor emergency room experience, which is a different story, but important to with regard to why we believe the Poison Center helped save our child's life. The emergency room physician took care of Ayla. The emergency room physician who took care of Ayla relied on all the advice and recommendations from the Poison Center for our daughter. He even said, "I have to listen to the experts," because he was not an expert in this area. Not only that, Poison Center staff called back multiple times to check on Ayla's progress while she was in the ER. They also called over the next several days to see how our little Ayla was doing. All told, the Poison Center staff members called 12 times, speaking with me, EMS, dispatch, the paramedic, doctors, and nurses in the emergency room, my wife, and staff at a follow-up clinic visit. As a pharmacist myself, and getting training about toxicology, I still needed to call the Poison Center. And now having a personal experience, an extremely scary experience with my own child, I feel there should be no question and no debate on whether there should be full funding to such an incredible service as the Poison Center. Our story is one of many stories out there, and I'm sure there are countless lives saved, countless lives that the Poison Center has saved or at least had a critical role in saving. We are forever thankful to all the staff and employees at the Poison Center who helped save our daughter's life. Thank you, Poison Center, for all that you do. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, please support the Poison Center.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Thank you for sharing your story, and we're certainly glad everything worked out. A very frightening experience indeed. Questions? Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Thompson, and for bringing us your story and telling us. I just want to know, how's your daughter doing?
Ayla is a perfectly fine, healthy 3-year-old girl right now.
Great. That's great to hear. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm really grateful to hear that she is doing so well, and I'm really grateful to hear your story. That's a hard story to tell, and as a parent, and I'm sure the other parents sitting around this table, I really felt it when you said I could feel her in my arms, because when your baby is in danger, there's nothing more frightening. I too have had to call poison control in much less dire situations, but the fear is no less when it's your baby. And I had to call them one time because we were visiting some friends, and I turned around and my baby had an ant trap in his mouth, and I swooped him up, and without that number on the fridge, I wouldn't have had the immediate relief that I ended up getting when they said, "It's not going to be harmful to him," and that would have saved. We would have had a trip to the ER. But in that moment, there's nothing scarier, and there's no more of a helpless feeling. And I'm glad that they were there for you and me and thousands of other parents who are in that moment. And so thank you for sharing your story. And I completely agree with you that this is vitally important to our state. So.
Representative Lane.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to say I'd gone through the packet as we were talking earlier, and I saw this letter here, and I was going to make a comment that the committee members should look at this letter from you, because it was very compelling, and then there you were to present it in person. So thank you for having the courage to speak before us in this way.
Thank you for having me.
Representative Uglem.
Mr. Chair, members, it is rather ironic that I'm sitting here today next to this fine gentleman, because in my prior life, I manufactured paints and coatings for 35 years. Not mineral spirits, but we used mineral spirits in the product. And the Minnesota Poison Control Center represents not only a great consumer protection, but for industry and people in all forms of manufacturing, can make available their material safety data sheets, technical information to the Poison Control Center. So that database is there. So those doctors and technical staff at the Poison Control Center can react in the appropriate manner. We all know there's tens of thousands of chemicals out there. And some are toxic, some are not. I mean, every morning when you brush your teeth, you're using propylene glycol in the toothpaste, and that sounds like some pretty bad stuff, but it's really not. But mineral spirits and some of the other solvents that are used in paints certainly are. So this organization does wonderful work, and it really is, the best bang for the buck.
Thank you, Representative Uglem. Other questions or comments? Seeing no other questions or comments, we're going to go ahead and I do need to vote to adopt the oral amendment. So all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. I'm going to renew my motion that House File 346 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in the HHS omnibus bill. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House File 346 is laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you, Representative Uglem. Thank you, Representative Poppy. And thank you, Mr. Thompson, especially for making the long trip down. We do appreciate it.
Thank you, Chair Member.
Thank you.
All right. Representative Schumacher. Representative Schumacher and House File 1201, welcome. Would you like to move your bill?
I would, Mr. Chair. I would move that House File 1201 be held over for possible inclusion.
You have a testifier?
You got my vote. That's
that's not fair. Representative Schumacher, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 1201 is a $3 million appropriation for the Text for Life program. It's a public-private partnership that allows for people who need support in their suicidal thoughts to be able to express their thoughts and to get the help that they need in a different format. It's a program that's been proven to be successful, and this appropriation of $3 million will allow us to expand statewide and go 24/7 with the program. With that, I would call up some of the testifiers to give you a better idea of how successful the program's really been.
Thank you, Representative Schumacher. We have David Lee, and we have Laura Weber.
I don't look like Dave, but he's right here.
Well, whichever order you'd like to proceed, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, and thank you all for allowing us to be here today. My name is Laura Weber. I am a licensed marriage and family therapist, manager of Crisis Connection. Campus Health is a community mental health center serving the Twin Cities metro area that provides mobile crisis response services to both Anoka and Washington counties, as well as operating Crisis Connection, which is a 24-hour, 365-day-a-year crisis call center. We provide the texting response system for the state of Minnesota through the DHS grant called Text for Life. The Minnesota Department of Health reported in 2013 that Minnesota had 683 deaths by suicide. That does not include the incidence of suicide attempts. That number is six times higher than the homicide rate and almost twice the number of deaths by car accidents in 2013. The World Health Organization has adopted the goal of reducing the rate of suicide in countries around the world by 10% by the year 2020. We would like this expansion bill to be one of Minnesota's strategies for reducing suicide statewide. Suicide is preventable. In 2013, you asked if we did not receive full funding, could we still provide this service? And our response was a resounding yes. In 2013, the legislative appropriation increased services to 23 counties across the state, mostly in the northern third of the state.
We are staffed to respond to texts from noon to 3 a.m. 7 days a week. With this expansion request, we plan to extend Text for Life services to middle schools, high schools, and the Minspiel College and Technical School system in the other 64 counties in the state, and to provide services 24 hours a day. We have 10 counties in southwestern Minnesota and 5 counties in east central Minnesota that are coming on board right now. Text for Life is both about prevention and intervention. The prevention component includes education, training, awareness, and understanding suicide risks and behaviors that we present to middle schools, high schools, and colleges. As part of those presentations, we ask the students to bring their cell phone, get their cell phone out, and put the Text for Life number right in it during the presentation. They now have that number at their fingertips should they or one of their friends needs it. That's a very different concept. The intervention component is about what we can do at the critical moment in time that they need us. There's a 5 to 10 minute window when someone is moving from being a suicide risk to being in a suicidal crisis. In that moment, we know that having someone available to them right there on your phone,
just like this,
making someone available right there in that moment is critical. This makes someone available to you at any time, anywhere throughout the entire state. This can be achieved through this expansion bill. It's no longer a question about how important smartphones and texting are to young adults. The question is, how can we best use what we know about their patterns of communication to offer immediate, accessible support and intervention services? Early results from this program show that after the school presentation, 89% of respondents reported they believe that Text for Life could help someone that they knew or them if they're in crisis, upset, or suicidal. For those actually using the service, 84% reported that their Text for Life counselor helped them with whatever they needed. 82% reported that their counselor told them about additional ways that they could get help. Text for Life has been an important access point for young adults who reach out for help, many of them for the first time ever. In 2013, we provided 3,480 text conversations in the year. In 2014, we provided 5,658, a 62% increase. Having the Text for Life number programmed in your phone in advance is much more effective than looking for a number that someone gave you on a business card when you're in crisis. With this expansion bill, one touch of the button on your phone can bring you in contact with a trained crisis counselor in that moment. We need to make this as accessible for people in a mental health crisis as 911 is for everyone else, or I would say as the Poison Control Center is. I ask you to please support this bill, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Weber. Representative Backer.
Could you share us what that number is right now?
What number?
No, for Text for Life. What is that number right now?
I had that question earlier, and I hesitate because we're not rolled out to the entire state, and we do respond 100% of the time. Therefore, if we have that number published in the metro area, we would have so many incoming texts that I might not have staff there to respond. And I do not want to respond to a suicidal person. I want to have someone there to right away.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough.
Respond.
Thank you.
So, sorry.
$3 million.
Thank you.
$3 million. I'll give you the number right now. That's correct.
Right.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you. Question for the author, Representative Schoemaker, or the testifier. When the person at the other end of the phone or the device that they're going to use that received the text from the individual, do they simultaneously respond back with a text to offer assistance to prevent the suicide and at the same time notify their authorities, their parents, or other additional help?
Yes, to answer that, we do because it's not a phone conversation. The other half of this crisis center is crisis phone lines. because it is text and they're responding on laptops, they might have a number of conversations going and a number of people in front of them where they're all having conversations about how to respond and who needs what, offering resources. If someone is in imminent danger, being the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline Center for the state as well, we have access to some tools where we can get that person's zip code incoming and be ready with that. If they are in suicidal crisis, we can call their local 911 office and ask for a response that way. We can have one of the shift folks doing that while the conversation is ongoing. Did that answer your question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Yes, it did. Prompted another question then. You know, oftentimes with the phone, these can be pinged. So the police, for example, I was at a Cub Scout meeting just last week with my son, and his buddy accidentally called 911, and then his dad saw it, and they hung up right away. We're around the country. 10 minutes later, the police was there.
Exactly.
So is this something that could be utilized together?
That is how we respond. When we need what we call an emergency intervention, a 911 response for imminent danger, we will call the local sheriff's department, the local 911. They will use their tools as well to ping the cell phone tower nearest. Just an incident, we recently had an incident where a young man from a middle school was contacting us saying that he was a special needs student and was abused and now feeling suicidal, drinking bleach. There was some concern that it was a prank based on some of the things he was saying. We need to act on that anyway. We contacted the local 911 center, who did ping the number, track the phone. Short while later, I got a call personally from a Mendota Heights police officer. That was his son's phone. His friend was using it that he borrowed from his son, and they were just making texts and calls. So luckily that was a prank, but that is how it happens. It happens pretty quickly.
And then lastly, Mr. Chair.
Representative McDowell.
Is there the possibility of having, you know, oftentimes the kids will have a cell phone and it'll be connected with their parents' service, Verizon or other carriers. Is there a possibility that if the text comes from the student or whomever, that somehow we can notify the parents? I had a friend actually in high school that committed suicide, and right in his bedroom, his mom and dad were downstairs. It was a tragic, it was on Holy Saturday night, and his parents were right there. Of course, there was no cell phones back in the 80s, 86 this happened. But if that could be notified as a parent, you'd want to receive that. Is that technology available?
That is something we try and do through texters. We always want to connect with their parent if we feel like they're in danger. So we ask them to talk to a parent. That isn't something that's going to stop us from calling out a response, asking for a welfare check. The police do respond. That's what happened in that incident that I explained to you. The student's plan was hooked to his dad, who was at work, and the Apple Valley police called him and said, "This is going on with your phone." We've had incidents where someone is in a home in far parts of Minnesota, and the sheriff responds to the home, and the parents answer that late at night, and they have no idea what's going on, and they say, "We need to find your son or daughter in their room." So that we try and connect with them always. I mean, I have three kids. I need to do that too.
Thank you, Ms. Weber. Let's see. Next up, we have, is it David Lee? Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Dave Lee, and I'm a licensed psychologist who has been working in the field for over 33 years. As in my role as Director of Public Health and Human Services in Carlton County, I've had the privilege of working with a large collaboration of many partners, including Minnesota tribal communities, counties, Minnesota Social Service Association, many communities of faith, and community mental health programs to stem the rising rates of suicide in Minnesota through the development of Text for Life. With suicide ranking as the 9th leading cause of death in the state, the fact that suicide is preventable, and national efforts ramping up with the goal of zero suicides, It only makes sense to prioritize this service that can be a link to life for countless youth and adults in Minnesota. With the help of initial funding from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, SAMHSA Division, this service has developed rapidly over the past 3 years, and the allocation of state funding in 2013 has allowed this essential service to become available to over 4,000 more youth within the past 6 months alone. Our federal partners requested the Text for Life, the Minnesota version, apply to be listed on the National Registry of Evidence-Based Practices because of its comprehensive nature and strong outcomes, which we are doing in partnership with Wilder Research. Text for Life has also been honored with Minnesota's Top Local Government Innovation Award in 2013. Text counselors provide prevention for many of the risk factors for suicide. The primary concern of over 50% of texters relates to mental health issues. Intervention is also addressed by text counselors through de-escalation and making connections with mobile crisis teams and local law enforcement. With the rural nature of much of the state of Minnesota and the overwhelming difficulty of accessing services for mental health in a timely manner, this texting resource is a lifeline in people's pockets. The education and outreach of the program through regional coordinators has proven to increase incoming texts exponentially. The careful planning and implementation of the texting program thus far has established a HIPAA-compliant, safe, and accessible resource to people in crisis. Text for Life has received numerous comments from youth and young adults about this service saving their lives. And I'll refer to your handout that has a number of those quotes under user comments. The following comment is just an example of the feedback the program has received. And I quote, Text for Life is honestly a great organization. The people who respond to you are truly caring, and they try their best to understand what you're going through. The very first time I used Text for Life, I was going to end my life. But I remember that I had this number saved in my phone, and I texted it. When the conversation was over, I ended up deciding to tell my mom to bring me to the hospital instead of committing suicide. Thank you so much. You are all amazing. End quote. I do not think that we can discount the inevitability of technology within our society, so to meet the broader population where they are at is necessary. As for many, this is their very first access to any mental health assistance. Referrals have been made by mental health professionals for clients to access Text for Life until they can be seen as an interim measure. We need to continue to be a state that leads the nation towards zero suicides with new and effective approaches to saving lives. There are so many Minnesotans who have been touched by a suicide death that it is time to make sure everyone has immediate access to a lifeline that can keep them alive. Thank you for your consideration of this expansion bill, because I've seen firsthand how the service can save lives throughout the state.
Thank you, Mr. Lee. And next up, we have Nathan Hart from St. Croix Valley, or Dan Hansen. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
My name is Nathan Hart.
Thank you.
you, Mr. Chair. Again, my name is Nathan Hart, and I've been in EMS for just about 20 years. 15 of those have been with my current employer in Stillwater. Over the course of those years, I've seen the aftermath of people who've taken their own lives. I've transported many people who've attempted to harm themselves in some manner, and I've listened and taken care of those who are thinking about hurting themselves as well. I don't want to sound callous, but up until December 26th of 2013, those were just people who I didn't really know, and it was just part of the job. The day after Christmas 2013, my family and I were driving home from some post-Christmas shopping, and I received a call from a friend and coworker. You saw her in the video, asking if I talked with our friend Sean. Sean was my best friend at the time and a paramedic partner for about 10 years. She told me that she thought Sean might be suicidal. At first, I just kind of shrugged it off, thinking that she was blowing something out of proportion. After all, this was Sean, a guy I've known forever, it seemed like. But as luck, or I guess bad luck, might have had it, we were driving right past his house, and I told her I would turn around and just go check on him. I was the one who found him lying at the bottom of his stairs, dead from a self-inflicted gunshot wound. Since then, I've found a new mission in my life, and that is to help us paramedics, police officers, who my wife happens to be one of, and the firefighters, feel like it's okay to be able to talk about the things we see, and it's okay to ask for help, because sometimes the helpers need help too. Partnering with Canvas Health and seeing the great work they do and the passion that everyone has there has given me that encouragement that Sean's life will mean something and his death won't, I guess, go in vain. The Text for Life program obviously won't bring back my good friend, but having the funding to expand it would certainly be a great service, not only to the youth, but to us who might feel like we don't want to talk to somebody face-to-face because we're just too strong to ask for it, ask for that help. I want to thank you for your consideration and time again, and I hope you feel like funding this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hart. Next up, we have Dan Hansen. Or we also have
Dan is actively intervening in a situation right now. He's not able to be here.
Okay. Are there any other testifiers that you'd like to bring forward? All right. Any questions for the author? Mr. Ashley Bertman is here. If you'd like to come down and testify. Sorry, I didn't see you up there. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself. Proceed with your testimony.
My name is Ben Ashley Wertman. I'm representing the Mental Health Association of Minnesota. And I, too, would ask you to support House File 1201. We see so many different ways in which people reach out for help, and it varies from person to person. I don't think I would ever use a text for Lifeline, but the fact is there are people out there that's the only way that they're going to reach out for help. In all of the times that we design services, they need to be designed around the people they serve, not simply because they're the model we've used before. For some people, they may only need a brief conversation. For other people, they may need longer-term intervention. And that's why, as this moves forward, we hope that you also consider some of the other resources that that these folks need to be able to refer to. You heard that I believe it was 82% of the respondents said that they got a referral while they were in that conversation, and making sure that those services are also there to be able to ensure that continuity for the folks who need further follow-up. There are several aspects to the governor's budget and some other bills, including one by Representative Albright, that are important in expanding these options for Minnesota. We ask for your support of House File 1201 to meet more of the needs for crisis intervention in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Grunhagen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for the testimony, and thank you for bringing this bill forward, Representative Schumacher. The question I have is, I'm just wondering, in terms of the victims of suicide, how many of them were on a form of prescription drugs at the time they, what percentage, if someone knows? You know, you hear so often the warning this can cause depression and suicidal thoughts on these prescriptions, and I'm just wondering if, whether psychotropic or otherwise in some cases. And Representative McDonald's trying to help me in my question here. But I'm just wondering, you know, what percent of suicides are they on some type of prescription drug? And if the warnings, or we should look at somehow critiquing some of the use of these drugs with people who maybe are struggling already with a form of depression and this stuff, and these drugs are actually making things worse. Now, I know, you know, there's a lot in that question, but if someone could respond, I'd appreciate it.
Ms. Weber.
That is a wonderful question. Unfortunately, I don't have data on the information of who has a adverse reaction to psychotropic medications. I'm thinking maybe the Department of Health would have that information in their data on suicide deaths. Otherwise, hospital records of some type. When we're doing a crisis intervention via text, we sometimes have time to get that detailed information. When someone is at risk, are you taking something now? Have you taken it recently? How much did you take? During the conversation, we can contact Poison Control and find out information about that. We refer people back to their psychiatrist or medical provider for any type of information when it appears to be a non-lethal situation. So in terms of, are they on medication, we do ask those questions, getting into what type and how effective is it. We don't generally, in a brief crisis text-related conversation. All good information, though.
Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Oh, thanks for that response. It just, you know, and I'll just throw this out to the committee. The when I was on the school board, one of the things that I spent quite a time looking into was the labeling and drugging of children. And at the time, and this is several years ago, more than several actually, there were no long. One of the things I found out was there were no long-term studies on the use of psychotropic drugs on young, developing children. But I did find one thing out at the time. And I had talked to a Marine Corps recruiter who I had heard if you're on psychotropic drugs beyond 12 years old, that you couldn't get into the military. So I had opportunity to talk to a Marine Corps recruiter about that, and he actually made a presentation at the Rotary Club. And his response was at that time, and I don't know if things have changed, that you could get into the military, but you had to get a waiver. And I said, well, why is that? And he said, because one of the long-term consequences of drugging young children with psychotropic drugs is violent outbursts of uncontrollable rage. Now, do you want somebody having a violent outburst of uncontrollable rage when he's got a loaded weapon in his hand? Probably not. And so I just think, you know, as an HHS committee, it'd be interesting to look into, and I don't know if we have time this year or not, maybe next, the connection between the use of prescription drugs and the incidence of suicide, to see if there's any connection and if there's any type of labeling, warning, or critiquing in those areas that we could do. Just throwing it out for possible thoughts.
Thank you, Representative Grubehagen. I see Ms. Abderholden is coming down. Please introduce yourself for the testimony, for the record, and address Representative Grunhagen's question if you'd care to. Ms. Abderholden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, Sue Abderholden, NAMI, Minnesota. You know, there was a black box warning that was put on antidepressants for teens. It did not bring down the suicide rate. I just want to have that be noted. And actually, it actually went up, although they're not saying with the research that they're necessarily connected, but it is something that happened. I think one of the things that we know about antidepressants is the black box warning particularly talks about the first 2 weeks after you take the medication. And that is because your energy levels start to come up, but all of your depressive symptoms aren't gone, which means you now have the energy to act on some of the things that you've been thinking about. And that's why some of that is connected. I think it's not right to say that all antidepressants make someone angry or violent or anything like that. And I think in many cases it actually does really help people go on with their lives. For those of you who've been around a while, you know that my daughter had a suicide attempt, and the antidepressants, I think, for her actually got her better. She is in graduate school. She went through college. She worked for 2 years. She's very successful in her life. And so medications sometimes are really important to get people through those times. Serious depression is not something that we should take lightly. And, you know, certainly we want to make sure that people are looking at the whole range of treatments. I would never, and NAMI would never, say if you take a pill, you're going to get better. You have to have therapy, attention to diet and exercise. You need to sometimes have structure in your life, especially teens, in terms of getting up and going to work and or school and things like that. So I just really felt compelled to come up and say that.
Representative Grunhagen.
Well, thank you for that testimony. And, and I guess where I'm coming from a little bit, too, and again, I'm a layperson. hard to be an expert in everything. But when I compare the amount of labeling and drugging as a percentage of the students in our country compared to other countries, we're way out of line. The most recent article I read was just a recent one. I think I sent it to all reps and House and Senate. You know, France just has a very small percentage of their children labeled ADHD and on psychotropic drugs with that. Yet we have a much higher percentage in this country. And the interesting thing about the article, France looks much more into the conditions the child is living in or situations that are causing that amount of anxiety. So I guess where I'm coming from, I think giving a pill is such an easy solution nowadays that we tend to just pop pills rather than actually do the necessary work to find out what the problem is. So anyway, throw that out.
And Representative, I believe you have a bill regarding this that will be up in HHS policy, so I'm sure Ms. Abderholden will have an opportunity to see that bill as it's coming forward and probably have a very good discussion on that. Representative Max.
The Lord willing, and if the chair, Tara Mack, allows me. Subject to her good graces.
All right. Representative Liebling, I'm sorry.
Well, thanks, Mr. Chair. I'd like to get back to the bill. I have a couple of questions. First of all, we've had some discussion in our HHS committees about outcomes. And I remember when this, we funded Text for Life, I think, a couple years ago as a pilot, if I remember correctly. And I'm just wondering, I've been looking over the materials you've given us, and I don't recall if we had any specific outcome measures in there for you to meet. But my first question to you, though, would be, how will we measure outcomes? And let me just say, I understand, this sounds like a great thing. I have no doubt that for many people, being able to text is valuable and all of those things. But the bottom line, I would think, is if we're actually impacting the incidence of suicide. And I'm wondering if you have a way that you're proposing to measure that so that we, if we were to give you a $3 million appropriation for the next biennium, how would we know if our money was being well directed toward actually the goal? And then I have another question as well.
Ms. Weber.
Looking at Dave because I think he wants to.
Mr. Chairman and committee members. There's a couple of different angles. We've been working with our SAMHSA grant that has the encouragement from the federal our federal partners to get listed as an evidence-based practice. There are a number of things that we worked with Wilder Research on that we're in the middle of that research at this point in time, and they're looking at a number of different outcomes. The part that's unique to Minnesota is
the community outreach, the regional regional coordinators going into the schools, and those presentations, they're measuring before and after the impact on students, their knowledge of depression, suicide, finding ways, gaining tools to be able to decrease the events in their world. The other piece, and this is where it becomes more difficult, and actually Wilder is finding this is it's new territory in the world of research, and that is how do you go into text-based surveys and find folks that are using this anonymously and being able to, with through consents and through getting permission for those that are under 18 and those that are over 18 obviously can consent for themselves, getting information from people that have used the service and validating those outcomes and getting those surveys. Those survey that is in process right now, it's extremely promising, the results that are coming in. Both from the, like Laura said, as far as the school presentations, the outcomes there are very positive as far as the impact in the community and the school presentations, but also those that have actually used the services and the benefit they have found in using the services also very high. But we are in process, and that will be submitted in our National Registry of Evidence-Based Practices application. The state of Minnesota, I should say, DHS, does have a contract in which there are outcomes that are being measured and required from this project.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, thank you for that, because I was just going to say there's nothing in the bill, but I guess it's kind of outside the bill, what you're saying. There is something in place to require some outcome measurement, because I could easily imagine coming back in 2 years and saying we need the next $3 million or $4 or $5 million, and, you know, how do we know whether this is really a good investment of taxpayer dollars or not? So the other piece of my question is really about looking for a little more specificity about how the money would be spent. So, you know, I'm sure you know that when you're coming in asking for an appropriation that the chair is going to have a target and we're all going to have to try to prioritize where dollars are going to go. So I think it's important for us to understand how you're proposing to spend the money. And as I'm looking at your proposal here, I see some things you want to do, but I'm not really seeing from this, you know, how you're costing it out, even in broad terms. And I guess I'd like a little more information on that. Maybe you've got that somewhere else, not in the packet. So if you do, please direct me to that.
Ms. Lee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, there are a number of things that are in being able to expand and meet the what I call pent-up demand. There's a lot of requests, and Laura could talk a little bit more about that, but the number of school districts, communities, colleges and universities, military, that have requested this service, there's been a real holdback with the number, marketing, sharing of that information. So not only the being able to take on the metro area, but also the rest of greater Minnesota, along with staffing 24/7, those are all issues as far as the capacity is not there. But Laura is the she runs the ship, so I'll defer to her.
Ms. Weber.
Thank you. Some of the specifics about the dollars that are being used would include some of the regional contracts that we work through. We have boots on the ground in different counties of the state. We want part of this is the response, and part of this is the education awareness and people to respond locally. So we do partner with local mental health centers who also house the mobile crisis response teams. They contract with Canvas Health to provide a coordinator for Text for Life specifically, who can go through their region to every school, county fair, anything that they can do to get awareness out there and provide trainings in the community. So we pay that contract for different folks around the state. We pay a flat fee for our text platform. We own the number for Minnesota, and we have that cost embedded in. The rest of the expense for this is the operational expense of text counselors responding. minimal overhead to all that, but actually delivering the service. So that's what this is paying for, to have enough crisis text counselors on board to respond to the incoming text whenever they come in 24 hours a day.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Lieb, Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess this would be more to the chair and to the other members than to the testifier. I mean, I totally get the need for, or the, you know, the interest in this, and, you know, I'm also interested in this kind of service. But if this was a state agency asking to do this, or if we were putting out an RFP for this kind of service, we would require a lot more specificity. You know, how many people are going to be hired? What are their salaries going to be? How much is the technology going to cost? And so on, so on. And, you know, I think maybe the chair would want to require, if the chair is really going to entertain putting this in the omnibus bill, which, you know, I hope it will, because I think it certainly merits consideration. But I really think that we ought to require of nonprofits who are coming for a direct appropriation here without any agency mediating it, that they really justify the amount. And because really out of our budget, $3 million is a lot of dollars. And, you know, without knowing, you know, how many people are going to be hired and, you know, how things are really going to be done. I mean, I'm not questioning what you're saying at all. I just feel like that's not enough to give you $3 million if I was sitting there.
Exactly.
So I'm just suggesting that, you know, that I think you have a little higher burden here, and maybe, you know, Chair Schumacher probably, you know, he's also watching the dollars, I'm sure. And I just want to suggest that we might want to maybe hold your feet to the fire a little bit more here so that, you know, so that we just have a little bit better, you know, because if one of my constituents says to me, why did you give this group $3 million? What are they spending it on? I don't want to say, gee, I don't know. Ask them, right. You know, because here we are and we're supposed to be vetting this. So thanks, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Liebling. Always good advice, and we are going to be looking at program integrity and accountability for nonprofit and particularly state grants as we move ahead. So that will be a topic that will come back, I assure you. I do appreciate the bill, and was just looking at some of the statistics that was put in the packet and just the frequency of suicide in relation to murder and traffic accidents and the preventability of that. It's probably a question for the health department, but just overall, do you know statistically in deaths per thousand or relative to other causes of death where suicide is in Minnesota and where is it heading? Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, right now it's the ninth leading cause of death in the state of Minnesota. And it is, as it says, as the video demonstrated, that has increased over the past 10 years by 29%. And if I may address, too, as far as the RFP goes and as far as outcomes, the requirement from the legislation last time and the contract with the Department of Human Services was to contract with an agency that is the National Suicide Prevention Certified Center in Minnesota, and I know it's a very detailed contract as far as cost and outcomes and so on. And so I don't have that information with me, but Canvas Health would have that information. The Department of Human Services would also have that information. And I know that from a statistics standpoint, Minnesota Department of Health is looking at, with the release of the new state suicide prevention plan, the numbers for suicides and the trending in that will also be much more available when that's released. Thank you.
Thank you for the information. Representative Schumacher.
Thank you for the hearing and thank you for your support.
Anyone else want to testify for or against the bill? Seeing no others, any questions? Seeing none, Representative Schumacher renews his motion that House File 1201 be laid over for possible inclusion in the HHS Omnibus Bill. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House File 1201 is laid over for possible inclusion in our Omnibus Bill. Members, our meeting is adjourned.